Good morning. Although we're into the third setra of Bamidbar, I'd like to go back a little bit. In fact, start with the first seder of Bamidbar, capital base. Rabbi Dessler has a remarkable shiur on the subject of seder, the subject of order. What is the point of order? What do we need it for? The Torah seems to be quite makpid that certain things should be in a very, very specific and definite order. In capital base, we learn the following. But the Torah says, "V'dabar Shem Moshe v'Aharon leimor, ish al digloi v'oisois leveis avoisom yachanu, that they shall encamp according to their flags, with the signs on the flags, which we'll have a look at in a minute. Yachanu b'nei Yisrael meneged soviv lo'el moed." And then it goes on to describe the position of each of the Shvatim and how they are divided into four sets of three. By the way, those four sets of three are exactly the same and are reflected on the Choshen of the Kohen Gadol. So it seems to be very, very important. The Torah goes on for a number of columns about it, describing exactly where the Shvatim should be. And so it seems that sometimes Seder is extremely important. So let's have a look at the role of Seder, the role of order, the way Rabbi Dessler explains it. And he tells us that there are three types of Seder. Number one is called Seder Leshem Seder. People like to have things nice and symmetrical and in order, nicely organized. I have a relation where when I visit this relation, a lady, if you happen to put something on a sideboard and you just turn your eyes away, when you turn back, it's gone, it's in a drawer. Right? Some people who just like to have things very nicely in order. Okay? Seder Hashem Seder. Rabbi Dessler says it actually goes further and deeper than that. He says that a person who likes Seder, or in fact gets satisfaction out of Seder, is getting it because the outside of his world reflects the inside of his world. A person who's all chaotic in his mind doesn't appreciate Seder. In fact, it irritates him. If everything is beautifully ordered, but inside he's in turmoil, that sometimes can get it. On the other hand, a person who is Mesudah, completely Mesudah, then somebody like that would appreciate the external world being a reflection of his internal world. It's said about Rav Simcha Zissel, a very well-known story. He went to the yeshiva where his son was learning, and he talked to the Rosh Yeshiva, "How's my son getting on?" But rather than getting into the nitty-gritty of whether he was learning, wasn't learning, etc., was steiging or not, Rav Simcha Zissel said, "Take me to his room. I want to see his room." Anyway, they took him to his room. I suppose this was a shared room, not his own room. He said, "Which is his drawer?" And he pulled open the drawer, and there were all the socks and the underwear, etc., all beautifully ordered. He said, "I know my son's okay. He's all right. He's got everything ordered." Maybe he knew the history of this son beforehand. Could be. But anyway, this is the story. Very well known. When he saw that his son had everything in order and he took care over, that means his internal being was in line with his external being the way he wanted it to be. And that is, Seder Leshem Seder looked at it from a very positive point of view. There is another type of Seder, number two, category number two, which is a Seder for a purpose. It's got a function. Now, in fact, the librarian of one of the very, very large libraries once told me, now he was a librarian, vast library, talking about hundreds of thousands of books or svarim, mixture of books and svarim. If the title of the book is not in the catalogue, it doesn't exist. Okay? It just doesn't exist. You've got to have, if you're running a library, something that, you know, you can find things. You look up a catalogue, it tells which row and column, etc. is without that. So in other words, that sort of Seder has got an actual function. It's a function to make it work, so that you can find the book in this particular case. So we have those two types of Seder, and we have a third type. And the third type is called Seder Leshem Hisachtus HaPu'ula. Seder, you've got a certain order, a sequence, an arrangement, so that each component, each part, each group of this arrangement can make other things work. And the example that he brings is a machine. Yeah, we know are very, very complex machines. Even the quartz watches that we are wearing, you know, are actually quite complex machines. They have components. Each of those components is itself quite complex. And the idea of one component is so that it should do something, input and output, so that some other component should work properly. So it is sachdus or pula, so that the whole machine works together, and we will come across a little later on another moshel that he gives b'shem his father of an automated factory. So the difference, in short, between Seder type 2, category 2, is that Seder type 2 is to make the thing work itself, our library, and Seder type 3 requires Seder to make other things work. And what we call nowadays in our modern language, value added. That Seder, without that Seder, you know, you've got chaos. You can have a bag of components of a very complicated machine, but it won't work unless the machine talks to all its bits in the right sequence, when one hums, one buzzes, etc., and you get the right result of the machine working all together. So having described what the different types of Seder are, Rav Dessler tells us that in Ruchnius, you need type 3. It's the third type of Seder. And each individual of us contributes in a certain way to the effort of the whole, and together we achieve Tachlis. In relation to this, there's an interesting vort by the Vilna Gaon in Mishle, on the Posuk, Rabois Bonois Osu Choyel V'at Olisal Kulono. And he says it refers to the 48 Kinyone HaTorah that we say in Pirkei Avos and Perek Vov. And those 48 Kinyone HaTorah are absolutely daunting. You know, you read through them and you wonder, have I got one, two, five of them? But 48 of them is very, very difficult. And the Vilna Gaon explains that, in fact, other shittas, but the Vilna Gaon's shitta is Osu Choyel, Choyel is Gematria 48, but Atol Isal Kulono, that 48 is a collection of midas, of attributes, that you have to have in order to be Koine Torah, but it can't be possessed by one person. Maybe it was by the Vilna Gaon, but he understood the populace, he understood the general person, cannot master 48 midas that Torah Nidresh, so the Torah is your Koine the Torah. So in fact, he says that it, together, you know, you have one set of midas, he has another set of midas, I have a few perhaps, and together we make the whole set of 48. That's a very interesting pshat, because when you normally read it, you think, you know, this is what I've got to have to really be Koine Torah. Vilna Gaon says it's a collective effort. And this is exactly what Reb Dessler is saying, that in Ruchnius, when we have Seder, then the sort of Seder that we're talking about is a very spiritual one, and is a very uplifted one, and together we can actually make the grade by all being what we are and contributing to the whole of Klal Yisrael, which is a single organism. And of course you can make Mesholim with a body, each part of the body signals to other parts of the body, etc. And the whole thing works because of the coordination and the synchronicity of what's going on inside it. Let's move on to something related. There are lots of threes in Yiddishkeit. There's Tanakh, Torah Nevi'im, Ksuvim, which is the three, and we have Kohen Livriim and Yisraelim. We have the three Ovos, Kabbalah Satoira, third son, third child, and so on. We've got a number of threes. And the question is, what is special about three? Why is it special? Well, this morning we said in Dublin, Yovoi HaKosov HaShlishi V'Yechriya B'neihem. There's something about the third component or the third part which is very special, not only in Yiddishkeit, but in all of life. And that, for example, someone comes, let's use a library again, although we've used it as a moshel in one context, let's use it in another. Someone comes, a stranger comes to a building which he thinks is the library, and he doesn't know whether it's open or closed. So he asks a passerby, is this library open? And the man says, yes, it is. Then another passerby comes past, and he asks, is this library open? And he says, no, it isn't. So he's in a dilemma. Open, one, closed, the other. So what does he do? A third passerby comes along, says, is this library open or closed? And he says, well, in the morning it's open, and in the afternoon it's closed. Yovaya kosav ashlishi v'yachriya b'neim. That's how that works. So we have a contradiction between two things, but sometimes a third source will be machriya. Somehow it tells us the niceties, the qualifications of what the first message was and what the second message was. We need a third one. And indeed the Gemara in Kedushin tells us that sometimes, you know, people are learning, takes two examples, Ava Benoi, Rava Talmid, and they're learning together, and they get into a fierce argument. Really, they're no agreement at all. And they're carrying on, Zozim Mishom, they don't move away from there until they get agreement in what's going on, because they're looking for the truth. Sometimes finding the truth is not a simple process. It's got to go through quite a few iterations of arguments, etc. And he even uses the word Nasim Soinim Zelozer. They're fiercely looking at each other. Each one is holding on very, very fiercely onto his own point of view until they get to the truth. Because that's what Limud Torah is. A process where we are trying to discover the truth. You know, our Gedolim never want to win the argument. That wasn't the point of winning. The point was of getting to the truth. We know the famous story of Rav Yochanan Resh Lakish. This was a chavrusa like no other chavrusa, such that when Resh Lakish died, he died quite young, Rav Yochanan sort of went to pieces. You know, he just couldn't cope at all. This was a chavrusa where his, so to speak, life depended on it, that he was learning together with Resh Lakish. And when Resh Lakish was nifta, Rav Yochanan didn't know what to do with himself, and his chaverim were very worried about him, actually. You know, what's going to happen to Rav Yochanan? He's going steadily downhill. His health is suffering, certainly psychological health and maybe other things, but they were very worried about him. So they gave him a new chavrusa. They gave him a new chavrusa of Marukva, and they learned for a little bit of time together, and it lasted, it doesn't say how long it lasted, it didn't last very long, this chavrusa. Why not? And Rav Yochanan explains, I can't learn with this man. Because whenever I say something, remember, Rav Yochanan was the Gadol Hador, right? So we're talking about his equivalent of Rav Moshe Feinstein in his generation. Gadol Hador means he knows the Torah, he knows what's right. But he will have a chavrusa to test everything out. And Rav Yochanan explained why he couldn't learn with this particular man. This particular Gemara was also very great in his own right, and mentioned very often in the Gemara, that he can't learn with him because everything I say, when I make a statement, or I paskin a halacha, this man brings me raya's of why I'm right. Yeah, every time he brings me a number of raya's why I'm right. But Resh Lakish, old Resh Lakish, what he did, when I said something, he brought me 24 raya's I'm wrong. And I had to defend myself, of course. And Rav Yochanan could come out okay. We paskin mostly Rav Yochanan against Resh Lakish. So that's what Torah is. So they weren't looking to win the argument. They were looking for the emes, bikush emes. And that takes quite a process sometimes that doesn't happen easily. Now, we've come from there, from that Seder, to a particular Seder of three. And that is an important Seder because we have a concept of a tripod or a stool with three legs. It's very special, a stool with three legs, as opposed to four legs. It's because when a thing has four legs, like a table or a chair, if one leg is slightly short, then the chair or the table will wobble. But a three-legged implement, a stool or a tripod, never wobbles because the third takes up the slack of the other two. And that's really rather important to us because the Shvatim, the way we started this particular talk, the Shvatim were organized in four sets of three. And it's very special the way they were organized. So we'll come back to the organization later. What I'd like to do is a Ramban on this particular parasha, We won't do it all because it's quite long. We've got other things to do. And it comments on the pasuk Ish al digloi ba'oseis kol degel yeh mapotzvuoi. He's first quoting Rashi. Every degel, every one of these flags was a mapo, some sort of sheet, as a flag is, tzvua toriboy, which was a pole, actually. The degel is the pole, and this mapo tzvua, the flag, was hanging off the pole. Tzeva shel zeh, loy ketzivoy shel zeh. The color of one flag of these arrangements was not the same as another. Kol echad ke'en avnoi ha-kavua b'choshen, each one of them had the same color as the color of the stone that was set in the choshen. So you have these special colors, and you have 12 of them. Loshen Rashi. So everybody blundering around in the camp, you look around, and you see the color of your flag, there's your flag, your color, and then you can proceed towards it. He then quotes in Ibn Ezra that not only were they colored, but simonihoyu b'chol degel, kadmanena omru, shoy b'degel Reuven suras odom, and on the degel of Reuven there was a picture of a man, a person, with tsuyun olov, dudoim, and overlaying it or underlaying it were the picture of the flowers of the dudoim. B'degel Yehuda suras arye, kibohim shilu Yaakov, because Yaakov compared him in the brochas to an aria, therefore his flag contains a very royal sort of picture of lions, and even to the present day, I think the coats of arms of royalty has a number of lions on it, three lions all with their mouths wide open and roaring. Degel Ephraim, Tsuras Shoya, Mitam Bechoya Shoyroi, Degel Don, Tsuras Neshe, Archi Idmil Kruvim, these Neshes, these eagles had upturned wings and they looked like the Kruvim in the Beis HaMikdosh, in the Mishkan, Shiroi Cheskel Anovi V'Hoyo Oil Moed Besoicha Emtza, and so it was arranged around the Oil Moed, these four sets of three with these flags. And the Machne Levia Seviva Besoicha Machanois, and the Eden were encamped around in the outer camp, and Machne Levia was the one right next to the Mishkan. Ken Shehuske V'Seifi Yitzira V'Hechel HaKodesh B'Chavim B'Emtza, and the way the Mishkan was positioned, was located, was so that the actual Kodesh Kodoshim should be in the middle of these concentric circles. Okay, the Mishkan in the middle and the Kodesh Kodoshim in the center point of the circles, and around it the Levim, round it the Klal Yisrael, and so you had this arrangement. And Techiloso min haMizrach Mahalach HaShemesh, and it, so to speak, the arrangement, which we'll talk about in a couple of minutes, is that it followed the sort of path of the sun, which is from the east going southward to the west, and of course setting in the west, and that's the way the Yidden were encamped. And Yehuda was placed in the Mizrach, in the east side, and we had the first set of three. First set of three is Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zevulun. And what we're going to explain, what Rav Dessler explains, is that these sets of three are very carefully chosen, and they're chosen in order to symbolize or resemble what we talked about with a three-legged stool. Each one of these groups is three-legged so that the third Shevet can support the other two. The most stark of these is the first one, which is Yehuda. Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zevulun are very interesting. Of course, Yehuda is Malchus. A king has to have certain facilities. So a king has to have learning of Torah. A Jewish king needs Torah nearby. And so he had Yisachar as one of his groups. So Yehuda being Malchus needs Torah as the next one that's mentioned, Yisachar, which is Torah, so that his kingship, that his sovereignty, is always informed by the Torah. Yisachar produced the learners. But a king that's bankrupt is not going to go very far. He also needs financial facilities. And as we know, Zevulun supplied that in spades, the famous partnership between Yisachar and Zevulun. Yisachar would do the learning, and Zevulun, l'chayf yamim, he would go out to sea and bring in the wealth into Klal Yisrael and supply his brother Yisachar with the means so Yisachar never had to. By the way, I've heard, I can't remember b'shem whom, that in a Yisachar Zevulun arrangement, People think sometimes that if I give a few quid, if I give a few pounds to a Talmud Chacham, I'm already a Zvulun. It doesn't quite work like that. Apparently it works that if you sort of split your funds, if you split a good, goodly proportion of your income, with the Talmud Chacham, it's then that the Yisachar Zvulun arrangement kicks in. But anything very much less than that, I'm afraid you're still on your own as far as learning is concerned. So we have this threesome here, and each one is supporting, in other words, the king is being supported by the other two. If we move round to the south, we have Reuven, Gad, and Shimon. And Reuven was the one that invented, so to speak. Of course, he's not actually the first. We know that Adam did, and others did as well. Reuven was the exemplar of tshuva. He did tshuva, and therefore he becomes very important to us. And he is accompanied by God. God, Shevet God, supplied Gevura. And tshuva needs Gevura. Reuven led the way with his tshuva, and God led the way with Gevura. And Shimon Lechaper, Shimon did some things later on, and therefore he needed the other two, the support of the other two, in order that he should get kapora for what he did. Then we have the Bnei Rochel, which is Ephraim, Manasseh, and Binyamin, going round in the clockwise direction from the east, going to south, and now we're in the west, in Maariv. Ephraim, Manasseh, they're all the Bnei Rochel. And finally we get to Don, Osher, and Naphtali, which Don brought Avodah Zarah into Klal Yisrael later on in history. Of course, the Torah knows in advance, Rabbi Shimon knows in advance what Klal Yisrael is going to need, and therefore, because he brought Choshech to the world, and he's in the Tzofen, which is anyway a dark place for some reason, Osher Lehoyer, that's part of his brachas, Osher Lehoyer, and Naphtali brought Bracha. So once again, we have those three, they needed each other in order to function properly. And this is basically the last part of the Ramban, which I didn't go through in the text, but just explained as he explains himself. So this is the role of Seder. This is what we have, that we started off with, the Rabbi Dessler's Seder. And the Rabbi Dessler's father gave a moshel for this, which Rabbi Dessler himself uses. He talks about a fully automated factory. Actually, it's a factory manufacturing matches, gofririos. Yeah, it's manufacturing matches, and he describes where the entrance of the factory, these lorries came in, or maybe wagons came in, with these boards of wood, big boards of wood. And the whole factory is automated. The only people that are around in this factory are people who will make sure that the machines keep working. Yeah, the attendants of the machine. But nobody does any work, actual sawing of wood or planing of wood. The machines do it all from beginning to end. So one side of the factory has these boards coming in, and the machine is the factory is clanking away with all its machines, with its attendants making sure everything is working. And at the other end of the factory, not only does this factory make matchsticks and presumably puts a bit of sulfur on the end, but it also makes the little boxes, yeah, in which the matchsticks go. So it's completely automated. He had a vision. I don't know whether such a factory existed in a Redestor's father's day. Anyway, he describes that out comes these lorries from the other side of the factory, and they're carrying these boxes of matches. And he says, it's wonderful, okay? Wonderful. Everything's automated. All the machines are making something which the other machine needs and takes in, and then inputs and outputs. So it's fantastic, but there's one flaw. There's one very, very dangerous part of this. I think the engineers call it the single point of failure. Single point of failure means if you have a complex mechanism, machine, arrangement, whatever it might be, yeah, even a group of people, single point of failure means that if one person or one machine fails, one little component fails, and that machine fails because one little component, then the whole factory grinds to a halt. And that's the great chisoron about having that. So he explains that the advantages, of course, machines are they don't complain. They don't need the coffee breaks and other breaks. And they don't get ill, they don't go on strike, etc. But sometimes they break down. And that the idea is that just like this factory, in order to work, must work in unison. Everything must have its role and play its part. And like we say with the Malachim, that noisim reshus zeh lo zeh. The Malachim work together so they can coordinate their bracha, their kodesh kodesh, their declarations in such a way that they're completely synchronized. And so we really have to deal with that and try and synchronize our own ruchnia so that we become a component of the whole organism, which is called Klal Yisrael, and together we achieve this shleimus. Rabbi Dessler himself, in this particular shir, actually refers to another one, which I'll just touch on, and then we'll leave the subject because time is not on our side. And this other shir is called Achdus HaBriya V'Achdus HaLev, how things come together. We're talking about coordination again, and he draws us a picture of the way the world works. Is quite amazing. We all know this, but when it's described in the way that he does, it makes it all much more three-dimensional. And he starts by saying that the world is created, again, Pekiobos, Basor, Mamores. I could have created them with one Mama, because to give Schar to the Tzaddikim and other sort of Oynish to the Rishoim, so he created it with ten, Asor, Mamores. And the Maharal explains, in relation to this, that Kol Bria Hu L'Tachlis is Galus Kavod Yisborach. The reason why the world was made, and the reason why each component within that world was made, was to reveal some sort of, to be Megala, the Kavod Hashem. That's what it's all about. That's what the whole world is about. It has no other purpose. So it's a Chesed Godol, wherever you can find it. And for gluyim halolu, these particular gluyim of the Rabbeinu Shloim Kvoid Hashem, Rabbi Ma'id Ma'id. So he didn't create lots and lots of people, unless there was a reason for creating those lots of people. If one person could do the job on his own, then he would have only created one person. But because he creates so many people, as Chazal say, Kshem Shein Patsufeim Doimim, in the same way as all our faces, you can recognize our faces because we're all different in some subtle ways, maybe not so subtle sometimes, but the fact is that our minds, our abilities, our potential is very different, and therefore every single person has something different to contribute. But it goes further than that. It's not only with people and their abilities. He talks about time. Time has also got that quality. Time has got the quality such that every single minute of every person's life, every second of every person's life, is there for tachlis. That same tachlis of the Megala, the Kvoid Hashem. That's what it's for. And that's why he says, a minute that's lost or wasted can never be retrieved. Famous poem about money and minutes, etc. in Hebrew about that money you can always get back, hopefully. But on the other hand, minutes you can never get back. Once it's tick-tock its way past, once it's gone, it's gone. And that's the end of that minute. So minutes have a tachlis, every single minute. And every minute of every single person has its tachlis. And it goes much further than that, that not only with time, but we're going through time because each door passes on things to the other door. And so you've got time having a function on each particular occasion. Kol rega rega etzel kol echod me'anivroim. Every single rega, gori miyuchat hu, it's a different gidui, different thing we can do with that minute. And therefore, if we waste that minute, then something very, very fundamental has been lost. And then what about the mixing of different things? The combinations of the abilities of people and the combinations of things you can do with it. So in other words, he's calculating that there are infinite possibilities to making this world. And every person has their potential of doing just that. And in another shir, in Tzadik Viralo, he explains that the idea is that the Rabbi Shalom made us all very different in order that we should contribute something different. Everyone should have a life which contributes something different, because the Rabbi Shalom doesn't want us to come up in later years after 120 and every single one of us is singing the same song. Singing the same song means, well, it's pretty boring. Each one of us should be singing a different shir to the Rabbi Shalom, a different song to the Rabbi Shalom. And may I add that all these shirois will harmonize. What's a harmony? What's a choir? A choir is they're singing different scales or notes, etc., and different tunes within tunes, and it all comes together if you've ever heard a symphony, a concert. And that's what the Rabbeinu wants, are the tachlis of his world, and that's what Seder is about. And I think that we obviously can learn the lesson from it, and try to be people which not only enhances our own ruchnius, make sure that we are supporting somebody else, and a chevra of three we've learned is particularly important, that two people can support the third, and in that way Klal Yisrael can have great benefit, and we can keep doing that and enhance our Yiddishkeit and our nation. Ad bias goel tzedek b'mehirah b'yameinu. Amen.